Now and then you miss it. Sounds make you cry. Some nights you dance with tears in your eyes. I came to visit.
Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. Of course, you're listening to Frank Ocean there. Frank Ocean dropped his latest album called Blonde about 2 weeks ago, and when he did it, it almost immediately shot to the top of the charts. Now, Ocean has enjoyed huge sales since then, but that's a lot less remarkable than how he released Blonde in the first place. Frank Ocean did not put out his album the way his record label, Def Jam, thought he was going to. Instead, Frank Ocean released the album independently, exclusively through Apple Music digital streaming. Now, Def Jam is part of Universal Music. Technically, Frank Ocean upheld his Universal contract by releasing a visual album 2 days earlier, then turned around and released Blonde independently, and thus cut the label out of a huge percentage of the album's profits. Forbes estimates he may have made as much as $1 million in the first week of sales. Now, Frank Ocean is not the first major artist to offer an exclusive release through a streaming service. Notably, Beyoncé's Lemonade made waves when it was released through Tidal. Larry Miller is a professor of music business at NYU Steinhardt and host of the Musonomics podcast, and he says streaming and new relationships between artists and their labels are completely upending the music business.
The means of production and distribution for many artists, especially artists at the top of the food chain, have become heavily democratized over the last decade in particular. And we're seeing that play out this year with the escalation of the music streaming wars.
It's hard to imagine how any lawyer at Def Jam, or for that matter Universal, wouldn't have seen this coming.
Yeah, the optics on this are not great for Universal, and we think largely as a result of the Frank Ocean move. Lucian Grange, the chairman of Universal, has put out an edict saying no more exclusives with streaming services for Universal Music Group artists.
To try to protect himself and try to protect the company from this happening again.
Presumably.
So Frank Ocean boosts his own bottom line here. He makes more money dealing with Apple Music than with Universal?
Yes, quite a lot more. Typically, if an artist is signed to a record company, in particular a major record company, they'll be paid in advance against a royalty rate. So rather than, say, a relatively, I don't want to say paltry, but certainly a sub-20% royalty rate, in this case, as the owner of the label, he would get all of the income from the iTunes sales and from those streams, which is more like 70%, assuming that he wrote 100% of the material.
So is there an object lesson here for artists across the spectrum? You said top of the food chain, but can this work for anyone who wants to operate in a new way and play hardball with a record company?
Well, theoretically, but there are still a bundle of very important services that record companies provide to artists. And the most precious commodity of all for most artists that I talk to is attention, having people know about and pay attention to the fact that a new record is coming out. If you're Frank Ocean and there is a huge amount of anticipation, you're in a pretty unique spot.
So we've seen other disputes like this in the very recent past. We've seen Taylor Swift's disputes with Spotify. Bands like Radiohead have circumvented the process entirely and put out records on their website. Fans pay what you want. It's clear the industry's changing and changing fast. How much has it changed, though, for people who aren't Frank Ocean or Taylor Swift or Radiohead?
There's no question that in the last several years, the availability of new technology and enormous audiences who have adopted that technology to discover and consume music has lowered the barrier of entry for almost any artist to be able to, at least theoretically, reach the platforms that could potentially attract a large global audience.
So that could be good for consumers. They might get more variety in their music. It's not controlled through these giant corporate record companies as much as it used to be. Maybe the idea of the old underground mixtape is coming back in a way, which is something I liked. But for the music consumer, since we're talking about Frank Ocean, is there any benefit for the listener for what he did?
There is more material released at the same time. I mean, this visual album, Endless, is actually pretty compelling. But the question here, I really think, is about the exclusivity deals that have been driven largely by Apple Music and also Tidal that have caused many superstar artists to align with one or another of those services exclusively in a way that is kind of anti-consumer. For example, if you're a premium subscriber to Spotify, you might not like it that that new Frank Ocean record is only available on Apple Music, although you may be induced to try that service as a result. But another knock-on effect of all of these exclusivity deals with superstar artists is that there is mounting evidence that piracy, that old bugaboo digital piracy, is being driven to new highs as a result of these exclusive deals.
Do we have any sympathies for Universal in this case, for what Frank Ocean did to them?
Well, it's hard to have sympathies for the major record companies in particular, but they are in a pretty tough position as a result of the growing strength and power and impact of the leading digital music services.
So if you are an artist who is on the cusp of hitting it big now and you've got the next big contract, you see what artists like Taylor Swift have done, what artists like Frank Ocean have done. You've seen the disputes between bands like Nine Inch Nails and record companies, or Tool and record companies. Tool hasn't put out an album in 10 years because of this nonsense. So what is the lesson here, even for the next big star, not the person playing in the coffee shop?
I think that for most working artists, this really isn't very relevant. They will continue to align themselves with record companies where it's useful to do so. One area where the relationship between record labels and artists, I think, is going to continue to be a really sticky one is for that group of artists who are playing music in formats that really need radio. We haven't talked about radio in this conversation. And, you know, radio is still kind of a thing.
How about that?
And as important as the internet and all the digital music services are with respect to discovery and consumption of music, if you are in the pop or hip-hop genres in particular and you want a number one record, in order to be validated by a huge global audience, the path to get there is still pop radio.
So you mentioned the CEO of Universal and sort of the new rules over there. What does the conversation look like this afternoon in the general counsel's office of Def Jam or any other record company out there who's looking at the situation and going, we didn't want this to happen again to us?
Let's lock down everything that isn't already locked down, number one. But number two, on the other side of the table, the artists and the managers and attorneys who are leading those discussions with the labels may use this as an opening in certain cases to renegotiate their deals.
Larry Miller, professor of music business at NYU and host of the Musonomics podcast on iTunes.
Indeed. iTunes is where to get it.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.